We are holding your Dalit on a base, two lines from the bottom. Going through the various things that the Mishnah had said, how many people you need each of them, you need for each of those things. Well, the last thing we talked about was the hektish. You need three people to evaluate the value of it. And then we said, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said that you actually need 10. So now comes the next one. Ha'erchin for it. We said the Mishnah, the halacha is you need three, except for Kaka. So then the Mishnah said, Ha'erchin ha'mitaltalin. The Mishnah said, Erchin that are movable. Now, Erchin, the usual definition of Erchin is, a person says, Erki olai, or Erech ploini olai. He says, I pledge to give my own or somebody else's Erech to the Beis Hamikdash. You look up in Parshas B'chukosai over there, the table by age and gender, and you give that amount to the Beis Hamikdash. Erchin only apply to human beings, not to anything else. So the question is, my Erchin ha'mitaltalin. So what is Erchin ha'mitaltalin? What is Erchin that are movable? What does that mean?
Let me ask you a question. If you're worth $1 billion.
It doesn't matter. There's two different things. There's Erech and there's Zomit. Erech is strictly by your age and gender. If you're a male between 20 and 60, for example, your Erech is 50 shekel, regardless whether you're the healthiest character ever, regardless whether you're a Rachman al-San at death's door, regard whatever, 50 slav, no matter what. There's a different thing, which we're going to talk about soon, called Zomit, where you say my actual value. And that would be what you do is you take the person and evaluate them how much they would be worth were they to be sold as a slave.
Wow.
So that's going to depend. If they're healthy, they get more. It's more.
It has nothing to do with you.
Nothing wealth. To do with your net worth as far as your what you own. No. Okay. So what is Erchin ha'mitaltalin? Amar of Gidol Amar Rav ba'omer erech kli ze olai. The case the Mishnah is talking about, Rav Gidol says, is suppose a person says, I pledge to give the erech of this kli, of this keli, to the Beis Hamikdash. Now, a keli doesn't have an erech. Only a human being has an erech. So what do you do? The Amr of Gidol Amr Rav, as in fact, Rav Gidol also says in the name of Rav, that you don't say that what he said is meaningless and therefore what it doesn't count for anything. No. If somebody says, I pledge to give the erech of this kli to the Beis Hamikdash, noisin domo. You can't give an erech because a kli doesn't have an erech. But we're still going to say the concept called einod amoti, which is according to the mayor, einod amoti dvarav latala. A person doesn't just sam say something that has no meaning at all. We have to assign it some kind of meaning.
Right.
So they've given, therefore, that adam yadeh, my timer, adam yadeh, shein erech lakli. A person knows that a keli has no erech, because an erech only applies to human beings. Begum of amal shum domim. So therefore, we understand that therefore he must have meant that what he's saying is that he's going to give the domim, the value of it. Shemachin knows in Dhamma, and therefore that's what he has to give, the actual value, the actual market value of the state. So therefore, Rav Gidol Amar Rav says, that's what our Mishnah means. If you say the Erchin HaMetaltalin, if you say this Metaltalin, I pledge to give its Erech to the Beis Hamikdash, it has no Erech, then instead you give it Dhamim, you need, just like with any other kind of Hektish, you need three people to evaluate the fair market value of it, and that's the amount that if you're going to redeem it from Hektish, if you're going to buy it back from Hektish, that's the amount you have to pay.
Isn't it what says Erech alive?
Erech, Erki Olai would mean my Erech. He would say Erech Kli Zeh.
Right, so he
could give the Kli itself to the Beis Hamikdash. It has a value, right? Its value, obviously, it has its own value. But if you want to buy it back from the Beis Hamikdash, then yeah. Okay, the problem is, Hai Erchin HaMetaltalin, Erchin Shel Metaltalin Mibayolai. In that case, the wording of the Mishnah is not precise. Erchin HaMetaltalin implies that the Erchin itself is something which is Metaltalin, according to the explanation you just gave. It's the Erech of Metaltalin. Erchin HaMetaltalin implies the Erech itself is something moved. Erchin, we're trying to figure out, if we say an Erech of a Keli, fine. The din is a true din, according to Rav Gidol Amar Rav. However, that can't be what the Mishnah means, because the Mishnah shouldn't have used the word Erchin HaMetaltalin, which implies this is an Erech which is movable. The wording should have been Erchin Shel Metaltalin, the Erchin of something which is movable, which instead of being an Erech, we transform it into dung. Erchin HaMetaltalin implies that the Erech itself is something which is Metaltalin, and that doesn't really fit with the case that we just described.
Erchin can never be a
metaltalin. No, Erchin of a human being is metaltalin because it's money, but then in that case...
Erchin of a human being.
Right, but yeah.
But you cannot have an Erech.
Well, that's the question. So the answer is, Tony, Erchin shel metaltalin. You're right, when the Mishnah says Erchin ha-metaltalin, maybe what it means is Erchin of metaltalin. In other words, exactly the case that we just described, where you said the Erech of this metaltalin, and it turns out, of course, metaltalin have no Erech, and therefore it's not an Erech, but rather dumb.
Okay.
It could mean that. Okay, that's one answer. Rav Chista Omer Avimi. Rav Chista says in the name of Avimi a different explanation. B'matnis metalfalim erchin. Suppose you can have, let's say we are talking about real erchin. A person actually says, erchi alai, I pledge to give my erch to the Beis Mikdash, but instead of giving 50 sloyim for himself to the Beis Mikdash, instead he takes a keli worth 50 and gives it to the Beis Mikdash. Or not gives it, but he says, I'm going to use this to pay off my erch. Now, if he wants to buy back that keli from Hekdesh, he needs three people to evaluate whether it has the fair market value. Okay. Still, that doesn't work so well with the wording of the Mishnah, because hi erchin am metalfalin, because then when you're using the expression erchin that are movable, metalfalin shall erchin, then the expression should be metalfalin of erchin, namely the metalfalin that were pledged to pay off an erchin vow. Okay, you could say Tony metalfalin shall erchin. Fine, Rav Chista could understand that the Mishnah by erchin am metalfalin means that case. It means metalfalin are pledged towards erchin. Yeah, that are pledged towards erchin. A third possibility, you have a bo'omer, bo'omer erki olai. Never mind all that. You just have a plain old case where a person says erki olai, that I pledge to give my erich to the business, and he hasn't paid it up yet. So eventually then, the gizbar, the treasurer of the business, or actually says the koyan, because typically the gizbarim were koyanim, he's going to come, and typically, they didn't have to, I don't know if they had to be the halacha, but typically they were. So the gizbar, the koyan, whatever, comes to take a mashkin from him. You're not paying off your erech. You owe it to the Beis Mikdash. Therefore, we're going to take something from you until you pay up. So the koyan comes to take something. Bar koyan ligus men and metalflin. So if the koyan is coming to collect metalflin from the guy, the shloisha, then later on, when the guy wants his metalflin back, you're going to need three people to evaluate the market value of it, and then he'll buy it back for that price. Karkois basara. However, when the Mishnah continues, of karkois, you need 10. What we mean is, in the same scenario, if instead of the koyin taking metalflin from him, instead he takes karka, then to buy back that karka, you're going to need 10 people to evaluate, for reasons that we're going to talk about in a minute. So that's what it means according to Rav Abba. So now it makes sense with the wording of the Mishnah, erchin hametalflin, as opposed to erchin that are karka. No, it's a fast day of the day after tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Sure. Okay. Omelet of Acham Edifti the Ravina. Okay, however, Rav Acham Edifti asks Ravina. According to that last explanation, what it comes out is, in Rav Abohu's case, we're not saying that in order to buy back the metalflin or in order to buy back the karka, you need 3 or you need 10. We're talking about for the gizbar, for the koyan to take it from you in the first place. The koyan can't just say on his own, well, I see this thing, it looks like it's worth 50 sloyims, I'm taking it for Hekdesh. You're going to need 3 people to evaluate it in order to give it to Hekdesh. The question is why? Rav Acham Edifti asked Ravina, "Bishleimel apukim mehekdesh." I can understand that to take something away from Hekdesh, to buy something back from Hekdesh, like in Rav Gidol's case and Rav Chista's case. Sure, but in Rav Shloisha, okay, I can understand you need 3 people for that, because you don't want to have, you're going to have one person or 2 people doing it. They might undervalue it, and then it comes out that you're taking away from Hekdesh illegally. You're taking away from Hekdesh for less than its fair market value. I'll allow you a little Hekdesh, but to bring something into Hekdesh, Shloi Shalomali, why should he need 3 in the first place? A person can be Makdish anything they want. Why shouldn't the Gizbar himself be able to say, the Koyan himself, be able to say, this thing, I estimate this thing as being worth 50 Shloim, let's take that in payment of your Erech. Amalei, sort of in answer, Svaru. Yes, but still, you have a Svaru. After all, Mali Ayuli, Mali Apuki. What's the difference between bringing into Hekdesh or taking out? And because you have to figure like this, a puki my timer, what's the reason why we're saying you're understanding the svarta, why you need 3 when you're taking something out of, when you're buying something back from Hekdesh? Dilmatoi, because you might make a mistake. Well, ayulinami dilmatoi. Well, when it comes to bringing it into Hekdesh also, you might overvalue it. The koyan may think mistakenly that this thing is worth 50 when really it's worth only 40. And then it still comes out that Hekdesh has been defrauded. The guy owes 50 sloyim to Hekdesh for his erech, and you're taking something which you thought was worth 50, and really it's only worth 40. So by the same logic, as you want to make sure that hektish is that you're, by the same logic as you want to make sure when you're buying back from hektish that you're not underpaying for it, well, by the same way, when you're giving it to hektish, you want to make sure that you're not overvaluing it. So therefore, it's logical that you need the same three. So the Rabbahu's case is still true. The fact of the matter is, by the guys, come on. The fact of the matter is, by the way, all three of the dinim we said are true. Rav Gidol Amar Rav's din is true, that if a person were to say Erech Kli Zeh Olai, he would give the value of it. It is also true what Rav
Gidol 14 to the 16.
No. A person says the Erech of this Kali. It is true. You have to keep pay the job of it. Because they don't have to draw the lot off. It's also true that what Rav Chisda is saying, that if a person is going to, that if a person declares that I'm going to give my Erech and then he donates a particular metalplin for the purpose, then later on you're going to need it evaluated in order to get it back. But neither of those is what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mastana is the Mishnah is talking about a Bo's case, where the guy said Erki Olai, he didn't pay up. The Kohen is now coming to take something away from him. The Kohen can't just do that unilaterally. He needs three people to evaluate the fair market value of the thing. And then once those three come to the conclusion that it is, that it's worth 50 or whatever the proper amount is, then that's worth at least the amount, that is worth the amount that he pledged, then they can take that for him. If less, then they need something else. We'll actually get to in Masechta Erchin. We'll talk about the whole concept of, we talked about it briefly in Bava Metzia, about the concept of Mesadrin, that if you have a person, what if the person said, I pledged to give my Erech, which is 50, let's say his net worth isn't 50, let's say he only has a total, his total assets only equal 20 or 30 or whatever, then fine. And then they figure out what basic assets he needs to live. We had a similar concept in Bava Metzia when he owes somebody money, and Hektish takes the rest. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah Rabbi Huda, we said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Huda said that one of the three who's going to evaluate the Talplin of Hektish needs to be a Kohen. So, Omelet or Papa Labai, Bishleim the Rabbi Huda, I need to receive Kohen. I can understand Rabbi Huda's opinion very well. The fact of the matter is, we said at the end of the Gemara, the earlier on the Dalit Amud Beis that we learned this morning, that the way we get how do we get these figures of 3 and 10? I mean, the Gemara left it as a kasha, but we had a shiur this morning. Remember, I okay. Yeah, remember because we have to make. That's why, because we have to make a petition log. Remember, yeah. Okay.
And we're not having a shiur.
We can't have a shiur tomorrow night, and we can't have a shiur on Tisha B'Av. So of necessity, we had to. Okay. All right. Anyway, so we explained this. The Gemara had explained as follows: Perek Chaf Zayin of Vayikra, which is the last perek of Parshas Bechukotai, talks about all the dinim of erchin and the dinim of if you donate an animal to Hektish and want to buy it back. And the dinim of if you donate a land or a house or whatever to Hektish and you want to buy it back. Throughout that whole parak, it uses the word koyin 10 times. 3 times in connection with erchin, 3 times in connection with an animal that you donate to Hektish and now you want to buy back, and 4 times in connection with karka. So we said that you learn 3 from the fact that it's 3 in connection with an animal, and you learn 10 for character for the fact that the total number in that whole section is 10. Okay, I'm going to ask why, and it seems to be inconsistent the way you're doing it, but whatever, that's the basic idea. So if Rabbi Huda is saying, I mean, there is an answer. One of the Achronim of Gavit Pardo gives an answer that he says basically that you look at it according to the structure of things. You have the section where the Torah describes about being makdish houses or fields or whatnot. It kind of summarizes the previous dinim about hektish in general. So therefore, we can say it means to include everything from before as well.
So we should actually calculate it both ways.
No, that's right. So the Gemara still left it with a kasha. But okay, anyway, that's a side thing. The point is, we said in the Mishnah you need 3 people to evaluate them. Rabbi Huda says one of those 3 has to be a Kohen. So according to Rabbi Huda, fine, it makes sense. That's why the pasuk says Kohen. El Rabbanon Kohen Lamalu. According to the Rabbanon, why Bechlal does it say a Kohen if it doesn't have to be a Kohen evaluating it? You can have 3 Yisraelim do it. Kasha. A kasha, why the Rabbanon would say that way. Then we said Hakakoyas Tishav Koyin. Then we said when it comes to Karka of Hektish, you need 9 Yisraelim plus 1 Koyin. At least, in other words, you can have more than 1 Koyin, but you need to have among the 10, everybody agrees you need to have at least 1 Koyin. Unlike by Metalflin, where the Chachamim say it can all be Yisraelim, and Rabbi Huda says one of them has to be a Kohen, by Kauka, everybody agrees it must be at least one Kohen. Menahani, really, where do we know this from? Omar Shmuel, so because Shmuel says, Asara Kohenim Pesuvim B'Parasha. 10 times in that section, in Parashat B'chol Kohesai, it says the word Kohen. Chav L'Gufei, one teaches you, just you need it for the fact that to tell us that you need a Kohen in the first place. The rest of them amount to a miyut achamiyut, because each one of them is memai that it can't be Israel. And each one implies again and again that it has to be a Kohen. Well, the ein miyut achamiyut al l'rabbis. And the general rule we have throughout Shas is when you have a miyut after another miyut, it comes to include. After the test Yisrael, after the Kohen, so it comes out the other way around. That even if 9 of them are Yisraelim, as long as one of them is a Kohen, which we use that one Kohen l'gufoi, then you're good. However, Maske for Rehuna Breder of Nassan, or Rehuna Breder of Nassan asks why? Eim Chamisha Kohenim Machamisha Yisraelim. Maybe the Miut only goes as far as fine. You need an equal number of Kohenim and Levim. Who says that? Who says it's 9 and 1? Again, Kasha. The interest is
3 and 7.
Well, maybe, but at least why should we say it's 9 and 1? Okay, nevertheless, that's the halacha. Now, the interesting thing is Tosfos points out, not over here, but in Megillah, because this Gemara is also brought in Megillah. We've been saying all along, ain't based in shuffle. Every time we learned a number of dayanim that are needed for something, we always said you have to add one to make it odd. We learned two, you need two dayanim, you need two or four dayanim for the Agra Rofa, so you add one and you make it 3 or 5. Why over here? We say it's 10. So Tosfos leaves it as a kasha. A couple of interesting answers that various Achronim give. The Ture Evan says that unlike in a regular case of a Din Torah, whether Din Imamunas or Din Nefashis, where you can go according to the majority, he learns here you have to have all 10 of them agree to the same thing. The reason why Ein Beis Din Shofar is because you want to avoid a deadlock. You don't want to have that they're going to split an exactly even number on both sides. You don't know what to do. Here he says all 10 of them anyway have to agree to the same value in order for it to work. So therefore, it doesn't matter whether it's
unanimous.
Yeah, according to him. So therefore, it doesn't matter whether it's an odd or an even number. Either way, there's no possibility of a deadlock. There's a couple of others. That's the Turei Evan. The Turei Evan, from the he wrote a sefer called Turei Evan. That's what he holds. That's how he understands the situation of you. There's a couple of others. A couple of other answers also. They bring in the name of a Belville Brisker and the name of a couple of other Achronim the difference is when it comes to a din Torah, when it comes to din Mamonos or din Nefashos, you're going to have the choices are binary. It's yes or no, chayev or potter, tomei or tava, or whatever. Here you can have 10 different people can come up with 10 different valuations. So it doesn't really matter whether it's an even or an odd number. You're not necessarily, it's almost the opposite of what Torah Evan is saying. You're not necessarily going to have a majority on one side anyway. So we learned back in Baba Basra, for example.
The exact same value for every person.
According to the Torah Evan, yes, it has to be that all of them agree. According to the second answer, no, if I care, different ones can come up with different answers. And we learned actually back in Baba Basra, we talked about what you do in that case, how you find the average between them, the weighted average, the mean, the median, whatever. Yeah. So then it would be the opposite of the Torah Evan, kind of.
But,
and then there's a third answer that Sfasemis says is, whichever, given that we're saying you need one Kohen among them, the Kohen counts as extra. Whichever side he's on, even if you have, they split 5 and 5. Whichever side the Kohen is on is going to be considered the majority. Yeah.
But wait a minute. Do they have values to choose from, or they give their own values?
No, they give their own whatever they... What do you mean? According to the Torah Evan, they would have to agree on it. They might originally think different amounts, but they would all have to get together and agree. They'd have to add whatever. They'd have to agree that they... We all agree, yes. Okay. Anyway. Adam Kayotzeh. And then the Mishnah said a person is the same thing, that you need 10 people to evaluate. So the question is, what do you mean, Adam be Kaddish? Where do you ever hear of a person becoming Hekish? Now, Tosfos points out, you could declare your Eved Hekish. But... Tosfos says, first of all, the word Adam doesn't imply Eved, otherwise it should have said Eved. Second of all, you have the opinion of Rav over there in the Gemara in Gittin that says that if a person is Makdish as Eved, then the Eved automatically goes free.
Right.
So therefore, we don't want to answer that. Rav Abahu ba'amid domai olai. The case we're talking about over here, says Rav Abahu, is where the person is not declaring himself Makdish, no, but he's saying, my dummy, my value, I'm pledging to this Makdish. The Tanya, as we learn in a Brisa, I'm a domi of life. Person says my domim are an obligation on me. Shama noisa ke'ebed anim ke'bashuk. Then we evaluate his value as if he was a slave being sold in the market, meaning it depends. It all depends on his health and his capabilities and whatever. So therefore, in that sense, he's like an eved. The eved is kashlakakos, and we have the famous hekesh between eved and karka, v'ishnachalta moisam, that we've learned before. So therefore, just like we established before that karka, you need 10 people to evaluate it if you're going to buy it back from hekesh because of the 10 times koyin it says in the parasha. The same way, the person is going to say domai olai, you need 10 people to evaluate what his actual domim are. 10 people to evaluate what his actual domim are, and that'll be the amount that has to be given to this hekesh. Again, according to the Torah, Evan, they have to be unanimous about it. According to Rebelvel, they'd have to come to some, they'd have to average out their amounts, whatever, yeah. Okay. Side question. What about if you have hair on, what about if you have hair on a person, for example, which is ready to be cut, the guy's due for a haircut, Bekama. How many people do you need to evaluate the value of that hair? Do we say that hair is considered as if it was already cut off? Therefore, it's like any other metal, and only needs 3 people to evaluate it. Or maybe it's considered like it's still attached, and therefore you need 10 people, just like you need 10 people to evaluate the person himself.
That's the hair of a sheep?
No, the hair of a person.
A person might,
for example, declare that he's going to give the value of his hair to Hekesh.
It could be a lady also, right?
Well, it could be, yeah, it could be a man, it could be a woman. Yes, for men also, if they grow their hair long enough, it can be used. Yeah, actually, Rashi mentions over here, for example, they used hair in those days. Let's say Rashi says to make sieves and to make straps. For animals or whatever, like for a donkey saddle or whatever. So yeah, they use hair for these kinds of things.
They make metal.
Yeah. Okay. So what would it be? Rabbeinu Hanano has a different understanding of the question in the Gemara. Apparently, he had a different girsa in the Gemara over here, which is, do we say that when the person is maktish, when a person declares his own value that he's giving to this mikdash, does it include his hair or not? If his hair is about ready to be cut, is the hair b'chalal included? Not do we need 3 or 10 to evaluate it. Do we b'chalal consider it part of the hekdesh or not?
Yeah.
So, Toshma, a maktish is abde ein marilin boy, come who from a braisa says a person is maktish is ebed, then it's not subject to me'ilah. Because an eved again is like karka. If you were to misuse karka that belongs to hekdesh, you're not chayav a korban meila for it. So by the same logic, if you were to use this eved, then you haven't committed meila. Rav Shimon Gamliel and Moylem Besayre. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it's true. I agree. You can't. It's true that meila is not possible with the eved himself because he's like karka. But it is possible to do meila if you misuse his hair because his hair is not like his goof. It's like any other metalflute of hekdesh. And we know for a fact that it's discussed over there in the Gemara over there in Gittin. The underlying machlokes is we're talking about when his hair is about to be cut, when it's about ready to be cut. Shmamina. So therefore, that proves that it's the same machlokes tanoim. According to the Tanakhama, he would hold since he says that the hair is also not subject to meila. That means it's considered like it's still attached. So therefore, when it comes to being poydet, you're going to need 10 people to be poydet, to evaluate it, to be poydet. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, consider it as if it's already cut off, then you only need 3. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, the question would rather be that according to the Chachamim, we would say the hair is included in the hekdesh, and according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's not. Most is fine. Should we say then that this machloikus of the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the same machloikus as we find a different machloikus of Tanoi? And in general, we don't want to do that because they should have been combined. They should have been said in the same lashon. We shouldn't assume that you have two machloikus in different places in shas in different cases that turn on the same underlying principle. The Halichas Olam, one of the Uli Acharonim, points this out. And in say Halichas Olam, the Sefer on Klolei Hashas, he says, when the Gemara asks something like this, are you going to say this Machlokas Tanoim like this other one? The underlying difficulty is, why should we assume that Rav Meir and the Chachamim are arguing in a completely different case on the same underlying principle as Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim are arguing in the case of the person's hair? If they both hold the same thing, they should just say, you should have Rav Meir and Rav Shimon Gamliel say one way and the Chachamim say the other way. In one or the other of the case.
So we have the same case.
The same consideration that applies in two different cases. But why is it
just one discussion? There's not two.
Why should there be two discussions? Yeah.
Right. And both on the same matter.
Yeah, well, with the same underlying principle, where the principle of machlokes is the same ground. Whether you say that something that's about to be cut is considered as if it's cut or not. We learn in a Mishnah, Rav Meir Oymer, Yesh Dvarim Shehen Kakarka Ve'enin Kakarka. Rav Meir says there are certain things which on the one hand are like karka, but on the other hand they're not like karka. They are still attached to the ground, but they're still considered like a kalplin. Ve'en Chachamim Moedim Lo'em, the Chachamim don't agree with him on that. Ketzad, what would be an example of this? Suppose one person says to the other, Eset Fanim Tu'unis Masarki L'cha. One person says to the other, I gave you to watch for me 10 grapevines that had grapes or that were laden with grapes. In other words, the grapes are about ready to be harvested. The other person counterclaims and says, no, you only gave me 5. Now, typically that would be a case of moedim mitzvahs, but over here it's attached to the karka. Karka, the rules of swearing on moedim mitzvahs don't apply to karka. The rules of moedim mitzvahs only apply to metalfin. Do we consider these grapes like karka or like metal?
You don't swear
on tainus involving karka. If I say this karka is mine and you're saying it's yours, or I say I gave you a certain amount of karka, whatever, you just as proof one way or the other, there's no shavua. Shavua only applies to metal. No, that's not why. The reason is we learn it from Psukim, because when the Psukim in Parashas Mishpatim present the concept of swearing on a claim, it talks about over there Asher, Alseh, Alsalma, Alfalaveda, which are all movable things. So Karka is excluded. Karka is excluded. Avodim are excluded because, again, they're compared to Karka. Shtoris are excluded because Ein Guf and Mamon. So Rav Meir would say that the guy has to swear because he's a Moedim Mitzvah. It's karka. He says it's not karka because these grapes are about ready to be harvested. Even though they're physically attached to the ground, they're not considered mechubal karka anymore.
Something
totally
unrelated.
Where the chachamim say anything that's still attached to the ground is like a karka, and therefore he doesn't swear. And Rav Yosef b'Chanina says to understand their machlokes, and the situation we're talking about over here is where the grapes are just about ready to be harvested. Namely, the mayor holds they're considered as if they're already harvested, and therefore you would swear on that. Or Mar Savalav Kibsuris Damian, and the Rabbanan would hold that it's not considered like
Kibsuris.
The mayor would hold Kibsuris, therefore you swear on them like any other motive. So in other words, again, the same principle that Rav Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim are arguing on in the case of the hair,
right.
The same principle applies over here in the case of the grapevine. Again, why do we have to have the Machlokas repeated with different Tanoim and in a different case? We have to figure out. We're gonna answer that, but that's the Gemara's question, is why in the first place, when Rav Shimon Gamliel comes and says about the hair, why doesn't Rav Meir come and say, I agree with Rav Shimon Gamliel, because I hold of the same concept. The answer is no. You could answer that in the previous machlokas between the Chacham and Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Meir might even agree with the Chachamim there against Rav Shimon Gamliel. So it's not the same. When the hair is ready to be cut, it's not considered as if it's detached yet. It's still considered attached to the head, and therefore, according to Rashi's understanding, you would still intend to evaluate the value of it. According to Rabbeinu Hanan, it is included only in the case of hair. For reasons
why would we make it?
One second, we're going to see in a second. Relax. Namely, Ad Kamla Ka'omer of Meir Hossam, the reason why only the mayor would say in the case of the grapes over there, why he would hold that once they're ready to be harvested, it's considered as if they already are, because the longer you leave them on the grapevine, Mech Mikash Kachshi, they're going to get, they're going to deteriorate. You can't leave grapes on the vine indefinitely. You have to pick them when they're ripe, otherwise they're going to start spoiling. No, aval sairei, but when it comes to hair, kol kama d'shavkalu, the longer you leave it on the hair, on the head, ashbuchi mashba, the better it is, the better it's usable for shape lock and ribbons and whatnot, all the various things we said before. So therefore, the mayor might disagree with Rav Shimon Gamliel in that case and say, you, Rav Shimon Gamliel, are saying once the hair is ready, once the guy is ready for a haircut, it's considered as if it's already attached. No, because you could leave it growing there for another month and it'll be worth even more. Hair doesn't decay.
They decay.
We're not talking about when you make a dreadlock. No. But that, the problem isn't so long. The problem isn't it's matted. If you comb it properly, then you have some woman in the Guinness Book of World Records, I think, with hair like ten feet long or something. Exactly, it's not kolayimid because there's no particular time when you say the guy must have a haircut, otherwise the hair is going to deteriorate. There's nothing in that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Then, so now we're done. Now we're done with all the cases in the Mishnah that need three dayanim or anything less than 23. Now we start talking about dinin nefashos. We said in the Mishnah, dinin nefashos require 23 to judge them, and the Mishnah also mentioned reveya and nirva require 23. Reveya and nirva is when a person has relations with an animal. So Gemara says kaposik b'tani. Now, when the Mishnah just mentions the Mishnah just says reveya, the Mishnah says that reveya, the person and the animal get skila. Means the kaposik v'toni. The Mishnah is just saying a generic statement. Therefore, loishna reveya zocha, loishna reveya nekeva. So it doesn't matter whether the shur is the reveya, if the shur is the one who the active partner over here, the male. The passive partner, the recipient, can be a man or it can be a woman. The Mishnah is just saying reveya, implying that either way the same dinim would apply. It would have had to say Reveya Zacha, Reveya Nekeva. The Mishnah didn't say that. So the question is, where do we get that if a man were to be a passive partner with an animal, where do we get that? If a man is an active partner with an animal, the Pasuk says that he gets skila and the animal gets skila. If a woman is a passive partner with a behemoth, then also the Pasuk says that, as the Gemara is going to quote now. Where do we know that if a man is a passive partner with an animal, that he should get skila and the animal gets skila? That's what we have to figure out. So, Vishlema Reveya Nekeva. I can understand if the animal has relations with a woman, and then we know both of them are chayiv nisa d'chtiv, because the pasuk explicitly says, it says you should kill the woman and the behemoth. And of course, the woman is going to have to be the passive partner. She can't be the active one. So therefore, yeah. Ela Reveya Zocha Menolon. But how do we know that if the animal is the active one and the man is the recipient, the passive one, how do we know that then is a chayiv skila as well? The reason is dichtiv, because the pasuk says kol shoychev behema mois yumas. Because the pasuk elsewhere says that anybody who lies with an animal is to be put to death. Well, wait. In ena inyan l'shoychev. Now, no, because the thing is shoychev also implies active. Shoychev implies that he's the active, that the man is the active partner. The thing is, we don't need that. In ena inyan l'shoychev, we don't need that pasuk to teach us the case where the man is the active one, because you have a different pasuk that tells us ish asher yitzin shchov to bebehema. The pasuk says in the parasha of Arayis, ish asher yitzin shchov to bebehema. Yitzin shchov, that means that he's the active one. Then most yomos v'asa behema tarug. So you don't need the pasuk in Mishpatim to be telling us the same thing again. Therefore, tneu inyan l'nishkav. Therefore, we use that pasuk to teach us that, that it also applies to the case where the man is the recipient.
Is there any prohibition for two women?
That's a different question. That's not really relevant to our Gemara because you were talking people and animals. The answer is that it's called Kamaita Eretz Yisrael. They're not Chayav Misa for it or anything. We did learn it. We learned about it in Yavamas. Yes. The Gemara talks about it in a few places. There's no Chiyuv of Misa's based in for it because there's nothing that can be called an action in halacha, basically. There is an opinion in the Gemara, although it's not accepted by halacha, that such a thing makes a woman possible to marry a kohen. The halacha is not like that, though. However, it's also, it's called Maisa Eretz Mitzrayim, it's the way of the immoral people of Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan, and women who indulge in such a thing are Chayav Malchus, Chayav Malchus, Makas Malchus, Chayav Malchus Medrabah. Okay. They can still marry a pregnant. Yeah. Okay. So the Akir Rachmana Beloshen Shoshev. It's called Kamaisa Eretz Yisrael. When the Pasuk says don't act in the ways of Eretz Yisrael and the ways of Eretz Canaan, it includes that. Yeah. Okay. So now the question is, if the Pasuk called Shoshev and Behemoth is talking about the case where the man is passive, why is Takah? Why is the Pasuk using the word Shoshev? Let it say called Nishkav and Behemoth. Afkir Rachmana Beloshen Shoichev, the reason why the Pasuk used the word Shoichev, implying that the man is the active one, is La'akushi Nishkav L'Shoichev. It's in order to make a hekesh between the case where the man is the active one versus where he's the passive one. Ma Shoichev, just like the case where he's the active one, who behemte be'esrim shloisha, both he and the animal have to be judged by a beis din of 23, and we learned that in the Mishnah from the fact that since the Pasuk says that you give him skila v'etza behemah ta'roigu, so the Pasuk is making a hekesh between him and the behemah, just like he needs 23, like any case of din nefashos, so does the animal. Ach nishkav, therefore, by making another hekesh between Shoichev and Nishkav via that Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, we learn ach nishkav, so also he's the passive partner who behemte be'esrim shloisha. Both he and the animal, because the Pasuk used the word Shoichev for the case of Nishkav. So it means both of them need 23 in that case.
It didn't say Nishkav.
The Nishkav, you wouldn't know. Then you wouldn't know that the Nishkav necessarily, you wouldn't know that it needs 23. You would know that they're put to death, but you wouldn't know that you get 23.
But you were still in
first skila? Maybe not. I mean, the Pasuk doesn't have a Pasuk doctor, just says Moist Yumos over there. No, maybe you wouldn't even know it's skila. Yeah. Okay. Next, the Mishnah said, Shura Nisko Be'esrim Shlosha. The Mishnah said that a Shura Nisko, a Shura that killed somebody, is put to death, also by basin of 23. Shanema, because the Pasuk says, Shura Yisako V'gambol of Yumos. The Pasuk says, the Shura shall be stoned, and also the owner shall be put to death. Now, the owner is not actually put to death in that case. He pays koifer. Well, he pays koifer if the animal is moored. But the fact that it uses the word v'gamba olav yomos, we learn the famous thing, k'misas abaylam, k'misas asher, the Torah is making a hekesh between the death of the owner and the death of the shur, just like if the owner was in a situation where he had to be convicted of a capital case, where he was going to be in a position to be put to death, you would need a beis din of 23 to do that. So also the shur has to be convicted by a beis din of 23. However, Amalei Abaye LeRava. However, Abaye asks Rava, "Mimai the Hayv Gamba Olav Yomos for Kmitzas Abaylem Kach Mitzas Shoro LeRava." Who says that this word Gamba Olav Yomos is coming to teach us this hekesh about that the Shoro needs a base in a 23? Amalek Tolo LeRava. Maybe the pasuk is just coming to tell us flat out that the owner is Chayiv Mitzah. So in other words, Rashi says, how are you taking the pasuk completely out of its pshat and saying you're only using it to say that you use it for 23? Okay, Tosfos discusses a little bit the question over here that on the face of it, and if it did mean that the owner is going to be put to death, fine, you could still make a hekesh, right? It says the owner is going to be put to death, which means 23. In other words, you could use it for both purposes, maybe. So Tosfos says over here the fact that since it says shur first and then the bailim, the implication is we're trying to compare the owner to the shur, not the other way around. If we don't know the shur is being judged by 23, then fine. You would say the pasuk is teaching us the owner is put to death, gamba olav yomos. You wouldn't know that it means 23. Okay. The answer is, Rava answers, imkein lichtev v'gamba olav lishtev. Because then the pasuk doesn't have to use the word yomos. The pasuk could say, asher yisako v'gamba olav, and also its owner. And of course it means then the owner gets the same thing.
Here we go.
The fact that it uses the word yomos implies that we're not actually saying the owner gets put to death. We're saying in a scenario where the owner would be put to death, you need 23. Therefore, so does the shur in this case. Okay, the problem is, because the Rahmana Hachi, how can you say that? Yeah, of course you need the word yumos over there. If the pasuk hadn't said the word yumos, habamin of a skila, you would think the owner gets skila. When the Torah says a person is to be put to death without specifying what the mitzvah is, usually it means chenek. Yumas or moist yumas or whatever typically means chenek. So over here, if it didn't say yumas, then you would say the owner gets exactly what the shor gets, namely skila. So of course it has to say yumas to tell you if nothing else that he's not getting skila. So the Gemara asks, what do you need that for? The skila sakadaita, how would you even think? How would you even have a habamin to think the owner should get skila? Kotel ihu v'sayif m'moinu v'skila? What would be the logic? You would say if a person himself killed somebody else, and he's chayif misa pereg, he's killed by the sword, which is the third of the four doubtless. M'moinu v'skila, you're going to say that if his property is sure killed somebody, you're going to make him chayif skila, which is a much harsher penalty? Of course not. So automatically you would realize logically...
Oh, yeah.
that yeah, a murderer gets sayyid. It's one of, a murderer is one of the two one of the two types of people who get sayyid. The other one is the people who are on a dock. Okay, you just have to. Yeah, we'll learn later on. I must have to. We'll learn the details of it. But yeah, so. So, of course, and if it didn't say the word yumas, you would know automatically. If it said asher yisak of a gamba olav, you would realize right away it's not logical to say the owner should get skila. Why should he get skila? Why should he be worse off? Why should he be worse off for killing somebody through his shur than killing somebody directly? So therefore, logically, if you go that way, then automatically you have to figure that the word, that the, well, you don't know what it would be. Fine, you, no, you would argue it could be senet. But in other words, so if it said yuma, so the question is that you're arguing that if it didn't say yuma, you would think that he gets skila, but you know automatically he's not going to get skila. Logically, he's going to get either sayif, either hereg, or chenek. So the question is, the juma high because of rahmana yuma, maybe takas, maybe when the pasuk writes yuma, it's not for the drasha kinesis bailam kach mispasher, it's rather la kula ilavei. The Torah wants to be make on him, la pukim yisayif lechenek. The Torah wants to downgrade him. Yes, if he himself had been a murderer, he would have gotten sayif. Like this, instead he downgraded the chenek, but still, maybe the word yuma means just that. You give him chenek, the least part, the least heart, the it is. That's what we're going to learn. Well, we're going to see in a second. We're going to see Mahalul Machloka Panoim on that. But the halacha is that, yes, but we'll see later on in the chapter. We'll see the logic behind it. So therefore, so maybe that's what it means. Maybe the pasuk means, Asher yisakol, the shur gets skila, the gamba olav yumas, the owner does have to be put to death, but not by sayif, because after all, we'll make on him, because he himself didn't pull out a gun and kill somebody. He just let his shur go wild. Therefore, we'll give him chenek. So how do you know it means? Why do you know it means that he stays alive as it is back to halacha? So the Gemara answers that. Hanicha l'mandam chenek chomer. Fine, if you're going to understand it that way, that works out very well according to the opinion that chenek is in fact stricter than saif. So therefore, you can ask the question: what's the logic that he should get a harsher punishment if it's sure killed than if he himself killed? El Lamando Amach Chenek killed, but according to the opinion that Chenek is the least harsh of the punishments, and it's less than Saif, Ma'ikal Meimer. Then what are you going to say? Takazai, maybe the pasuk means that we downgrade him from Saif to Chenek, but he still gets Chenek.
What happened to
Ashur? Ashur gets skilled. Ashur Yisrael. Well, that the pasuk spells out too.
Yeah.
The question is, when it says the Gamba all of Yumas, you're saying the Gamba all of Yumas means
yeah.
that he doesn't get
Ashur more.
Yeah, well, the truth is the shur gets skila regardless, actually. But yeah, the pasuk asher yisakol v'gamba olav yumas is talking about a shur mu'ud. That's what we're asking.
So we're still trying
to figure out how we know that the gamba olav yumas does not mean like what it sounds at face value, that in fact the owner is put to death with some kind of misa, but rather it's just coming for the drasha about the 23. We're still trying to figure that out. Okay, the answer is loy sakadai. You're fine, but you can't think that way. Because the pasuk continues. You can't think that the pasuk is actually coming to tell us that the owner is chayav misa. Because the next pasuk continues im kofer yushas olav. The pasuk next continues that if compensation is assessed on him, kofer, which we learned about in Bava Kama, where it's meant as a kapara, it's meant as compensation for the victim, whatever. Now, if you're going to tell me the owner himself is actually chayav misa, but the pasuk says clearly in Parshas Maaseh, loy tifku kofer lenefesh ritzeach. The pasuk says that if you have a ritzeach who's chayav misa, don't commute his sentence for a fine. So obviously it has to mean that he's not chayav misa, otherwise the Torah couldn't say him kofer yushatolam. However, that's still not good enough. Abba. You could argue the logic the other way around. Mishumhi, that's just it. Mishumhi gufa, but that's just it. Maybe the pasuk is telling us like this. If the person is chayav misa because he himself killed, which is the scenario in Parshas Maaseh, then don't commute it for money, you have to kill him. But if it's sure killed, yes, he's chayav misa, a lesser misa, because chedek. However, we're further going to be make on him tiskele b'mamayna. We'll also lifrit nashim b'mamayna. Maybe it is good enough. Maybe the Torah is saying because it wasn't him who killed directly, only his sure, we will allow him to commute it for money. So you still don't know. Attack it. Ella, no. So you can't use any of those answers. Omer Chizkiah, no, rather Chizkiah said, v'chein tonet v'chizkiah, and they learned also a brisa to this effect in the yeshiva of Chizkiah. Omer Krah, it's like this, the pasuk says, in that same section in Parshas Maaseh, Mos Yumas Hamaker Ritzeahu, the one who hit somebody else and killed him, shall be put to death, he is a retzeach. By saying, retzeach hu implies, aritichose, after hergoy, you only kill him when he himself killed.
Directly
killed the other person. You don't kill him when it's only his shor that killed. So based on that pasuk in Masay, that forces us, therefore, to understand the pasuk in Mishpatim, never mind all the svaras that we said before. That alone forces us to understand the pasuk in Mishpatim. The gamba, all of Yom, it does not mean that the owner himself is put to death. But, right. And therefore, it must mean, therefore, the pasuk is only coming to tell us that we're making a hekesh between it were he to be in a case of din in a fashos, he'd need 23, and therefore the animal also needs 23.
Is it not, like,
no.
Well,
there is that also. Part of it. Well, that's true. That is true. Good. And the Gemara does actually discuss in Baruch Hama, what's the essential thing of the kofer? Is it kapara for him? Because otherwise, yes, you should be chayav mitzvah b'shamayim. Or is it essentially compensation for the value of the victim? Yeah. So it also makes a difference whether it's the value of the mazik or the value of the nizik. So yeah, that comes into play also. And it is true, Mephoshim on the pasuk, on a pshat level, yeah, the pasuk is saying that he ought to be chayav mitzvah, except the Torah allows him to give a fine instead. But yeah, I mean, yeah. Okay. Fine. Now we have another question. So we've said the various cases when an animal has to be judged and put to death require the case of Reveya and Nirba, the case of Chur and Niskol, require 23. Now we have another case. Which is the case in history where an animal could be chayav mitzvah. Shor Sinai b'kama. What about an ox that was on Har Sinai?
Whoa.
We know the pasuk says during Matan Torah and Parashat Yitzray, you have to put a border around the mountain. Nobody should go up. In Behema, in Ish LaYichya, Loisiga BaYod, no hand or no person or no animal should touch it. Yisaku LaYora Yiyora, he'll be stoned or he'll be pushed down later on in the Masechta. By the way, we're going to learn from that pasuk. That's where we learn the process, the procedure of skila. That first involves throwing the guy off the platform over there, and then if he's still alive, then he pelts, and then you put a heavy stone on him.
And then if he's still alive,
then you pelt him with a lot of stone. Yeah. So we'll see that.
That's where they get wrong in all the depictions of stone.
Indeed. Okay, anyway. So the question is, when the pasuk says soko yisoko lo yora yora, you know, when we learn it as kids, we always just learn. It means the Eibishter is just gonna knock that person or that animal off the mountain. We're saying over here that's not what it means. It means that ox or that person is going to have to be judged by Beis Din and judged to see whether he's chayav.
Before so the question.
This is before, but this is as long as the Shekhinah was on a house seat.
Yeah.
Okay. So the question. So the question is, Bekama, how many dayonim do you need to judge such an animal? Now, Tosfos asks the question. Who cares? It's history. My da habahama.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But Tosfos says that maybe first we still want to understand the meaning of the psukim. It's still important to understand when the pasuk tells us something, we want to understand it. Different other Rishonim give different other answers. One of an interesting answer that the Meiri says is he brings from a Mechilta, which that this was his version of the Mechilta anyway, is that the same din that applies to an animal that would wander onto Har Sinai during Matan Torah, the same din would apply to an animal that wanders into the Beis Hamikdash. It also has to be put to death. So therefore, the question is a real live question. Then the not even the Kodesh HaKadosh, but the wanders into the Azara, whatever.
You had to have it.
You bring them in. Bring them as a carbon. We're talking about if an animal Sam wanders in.
Either way, they go in, they get killed.
fine. But no, you were talking about if an animal Sam wanders in without having been declared hekdesh or anything. They give different other answers anyway. Some of the Rishonim say, let's say for example, a person were to make a neder that depends on the number of dayonim. If a person were to make a neder, let's say, I promise to give tzedakah to as many aniyim as are needed to judge shoriti. So then you need to know how many dayonim. So how many? The question is, mi gomar shal mi doras eloi. Do we learn a case that was a one-time thing, matan Torah? Do we learn that from the case of Dirdus, from the way it is in future generations? Or lawyer, maybe not. Toshma, the Tony Domi by Cheskel, when the Pasuk says, in Behema, Yvish La Yichya, when the Pasuk says, whether animal or man will not live, it's again making a heckish between the animal and the man. Ma Ish B'chav Gimel, Ach Behema B'chav Gimel. Just like the person would need to be judged by 23, so the animal needs to be judged by 23. And that answers that. Shor Sinai would have to be judged by 23.
Because of the Pasuk.
Because of the Pasuk, in Behema, Yvish. Next.
That's the same Behemoth that we used for the show in this film.
It's not the same Pulsic, but yeah.
It's not the same Pulsic.
No. This is Pulsic and partial Easter egg.
Oh.
Yeah.
He
in Behemoth, in Ishla Yichya, this is by Matt Nerd.
Oh, I get it. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, Ha'ariva Zev. The Mishnah had said that if you have a lion or a wolf or any, we had five different species over there that kill somebody are also to be put to death by Beis Din 23. Amar Rish Lakish, Vuhu Shehemisu. So Rish Lakish says, this is Dafka talking about if they killed somebody. But if they didn't kill anybody yet, you don't stand, just bring them to Beis Din and judge them just because they're dangerous creatures. Evidently then, Rish Lakish holds, you are allowed to have a pet lion or a pet wolf or whatever because you are able to tame them so that they won't injure people. So therefore, it's not considered like hefker. It's not considered something like you have a wild animal in the neighborhood and the first one who kills it, then it should do it. If a person has such a creature as a pet, he's responsible, not domesticated per se, but tamed at least. It is possible to tame them, and therefore, as long as yeah. Rabbi Yechon and Amma, Afa Bishaloyim. So Rabbi Yechon says, no, even if the animal never put anybody to death, it's considered hefker. You have no business having a pet lion in the first place. Amma Kasaba, Ein Lahem Tavros, Ein Lahem Bailim, which means Rabbi Yechon holds, therefore, that you cannot tame them, and they're not considered to have an owner.
The word harvest means literally...
It means literally raising them, so it means taming them.
What means harvest raw?
Harvest raw means a bad upbringing. So you're able to bring them up in the right way. Okay, let's consider how this works with the Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kol HaKodim Lahor Gam Zacha. We said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer argued with the Chachamim and said that the first one who sees this lion or this wolf or whatever, whoever kills it is Zoche. So, Bishlam Rabbi Yechon Lamai Zacha Zacha La'orah. According to Rabbi Yechon, we understand. We're saying the animal is supposed to be Hefker in the first place. Nobody has any business owning a lion or a wolf or whatever. Therefore, it's considered hefker, and whoever kills it first is zoche in the sense that, therefore, he's zoche, he has a skin. He now has a lion skin or whatever that they can use, because it's considered hefker. According to Rish Lakish, in what sense are you zoche? They had an owner. L'chora, the skin would still go to the owner. So in what sense were you zoche? The answer is, given Shehemisu, Rish Lakish would say, we're talking about once the animal killed somebody, you don't need a Beis Din of 23, says Rabbi Eliezer, just then they're free for all. Then it's fine. The skin has to go to the owner, but Shavinu Rabbanan command Degomer Dinayu, the Rabbanan consider therefore such an animal, says Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, as if the din was already passed, and as if it was already condemned to death. The Isore Hananinu, therefore the animal is also Bahana, just like a Shehemisu. My zacha, zacha l'shamayim. And what is when Rish Lakish says zacha? When Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah says zacha, Rish Lakish would understand zacha means zacha l'shamayim. He did a mitzvah. He saved the world, basically. Yeah. Tanya Chapa says Rish Lakish. Indeed, we learn a brisa like Rish Lakish's understanding, where the brisa says echad shor shehemis, whether a shor that killed somebody, the echad behemah b'chayah shehemis, or whether any other animal, any other domestic or wild animal that killed, b'chav gimel, they have to be judged by 23. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a shor shehemis, that's a mishloisher. Rabbi Eliezer says only a shor requires 23. Ushaya behemah b'chayah shehemis, any other domestic or wild animal that killed, kol hakodim lahogan, anybody who's first to kill them, zocha behem l'shamayim, is zocha in the sense that he was zocha, he's credited by the Eivish. He saved the people. He snuck off the Rashi.
No one had a face.
Well, so that's the next one. Rabbi Akiva Oyem Mechulos. Then we said, Rabbi Akiva said in the Mishnah, he softened the Esther Mishlosha. So the question is, Rabbi Akiva Hainu Tanakama. Isn't Rabbi Akiva saying the same thing as the Tanakama, who also said you need 23? The answer is, Ikka Benayim Nachosh. The difference between them is the Nachosh. The Tanakama holds the Nachosh also, if it killed somebody, requires, according to Rish Lakish, if it killed somebody, according to Rabbi Yechon, and even if not, requires 23 to judge it. According to Rabbi Akiva, he says a Nachosh is Mu'ad La'olam, a Nachosh can never be tamed, therefore that's it. Then the first person who sees a Nachosh can kill it.
So
you have three different opinions. The Chachamim would say that all six animals mentioned in the Mishnah, you need a Beis Din of 23 after they kill the coin to Rish Lakish, even before they kill the coin to Rabbi Yechonon, but you still need a Beis Din. According to Rabbi Eliezer, all six of them you can just kill on the spot. Same thing, subject to Rabbi Yechonon and Rish Lakish. According to Rabbi Akiva, five. After they kill the according to Rish Lakish, after according to Rish Lakish, before according to Rabbi Yochanan,
according to
Rabbi Eliezer, each one of the Amoraim has to be able to understand all three opinions in the Mishnah.
Right.
So according to the Tanakhama in the Mishnah, you have six creatures that you need a Beis Din of 23 to kill them. In what scenario does a Beis Din of 23 kill them? According to Rish Lakish, after they put somebody to death. After they killed somebody, according to Rabbi Yochanan, even if they didn't yet. They're just the fact that they're dangerous animals. But nevertheless, somebody has a pet lion, still, if you want it killed so that it doesn't kill anybody, you need to take it to a Beis Din of 23. Then you have, that according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of a Chacham. Then Rabbi Eliezer says, all six of them, you don't need a Beis Din of 23. After any of these six creatures killed anybody, according to Rish Lakish, or even before they killed anybody, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can go kill them on the spot. According to Rabbi Akiva, there's the five versus there's the one. The five of them, he says, you need a Beis Din of 23. The lion, the bear, the wolf, the whatever. You need a Beis Din of 23. The snake is the exception. That one you can kill on the spot. And that's back of the halacha as the Rambam brings it in as the Rambam. If you see a snake, even if you have another person in the neighborhood who owns a snake. Then the din is still according to Rish Lakish, but who shame misu? Only if the creature killed somebody. So if the snake actually killed somebody, then the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva that anybody can just kill it on the spot. There's no bringing it to a Beis Din of 23. But if a person has, let's say, for example, a pet lion or a pet wolf or whatever, and it killed somebody, you'll have to bring it to a Beis Din of 23.
Wow.
Yeah.